Right. So we're holding on Yud Zayin on the days, the first Mishnah. We're actually a little bit ahead of ahead of everybody else now. big change from where we've been behind. But okay. So the subject of this parak again has been things that combine together. We started talking about things that combine together as far as Me'ilah, and that led us to Nevela and to Pigul and Nevela. Not really different kinds of Nevelas, Shrothim, et cetera, et cetera. More on this. Pigul and Noser ain't Mekstarchin. Pigul and Noser don't combine. So if you have a half Kazayis to one and a half Kazayis to the other, they don't combine together. Mefnesh and Shnei Shemis, because they're two different names, they're two different types of Isurim. We'll see in the Gemara what they do and don't combine for. But Hasheret v'Hanavela, similarly, a Sheret and a Nevela, v'chein a Nevela v'saramest, or a piece of Nevela and a piece of flesh from a dead person, ein mitzayfim zeim zeh, they don't combine together. If you have a kazayis combined of them, l'tamei, to make a person tamei, or to make anything tamei, hafila bakal shebishnei, and even according to the more lenient one, because the previous Mishnah had given the rule that when you have things that have different sizes that are needed to be metame or different levels of tumah, then they don't combine together. A sheret and a nevela, for example, are different levels of tumah, because a sheret is a different shiurim, actually. A sheret, you need padosh, you need a lentil size. And a nevela, you need a kazayis. There's also arguably, and some of the Rishonim learn this way, there's also a difference as far as the degree of trauma, because a sheret is metame only if you touch it, and a nevela is also metame if you carry it without touching it.
The sheret is smaller, but it's more, with other ones, more strength.
Right, but it all is right. And then similarly, as far as nevela and mes, same idea. You have it the same size, both kazayis, but it's completely different levels of trauma, because one is trumas erev and the other one is trumas shiva. So they don't even combine together kakal shavishnei. And we don't say, in other words, let's say, if you have, let's say, a half kazayis of a nevela and half kazayis of a mes, you don't say, well, okay, fine, it's not going to be matami you set for 7 days, but at least it should be matami you for one day, and you have to go to the mikveh. No, not even. Anyway.
How is easier? You don't take the easier one.
You don't take the easier one and say that the whole thing follows it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yehoda Amar Shmuel, Lo Shonu Elo Tumas Hayadayim. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, as far as Pigul and Noso not combining together, that's only when we're talking about as far as the Din Drabbanon, that both of those things make a person's hands tummy. The Gemara explains at the end of Tzachim that the Chachamim made a Takana that Pigul and Noser are metame, a person's hands. In the case of Pigul, the Gemara says they're mishum chashdei kohonim. There are kohanim who are suspect of making people's korban as Pigul on purpose. They'll deliberately have the wrong machshava and make the korban Pigul. But, well, let's say, for example, they don't like the guy, so they want to pass a korban and force him to bring another one.
Everywhere there's a lot of trouble in general business.
Whenever there could be. But the point is, no, we always find the kohanim were always very careful about tumah v'tahara. So therefore, like this, when they made a gzera, that pigul was going to be metame, a person's hands, when he touches it, then that'll make the kohanim not do that, because they don't want their hands to become tummy. As far as Noser, the Gemara says a different thing over there. It's Mishum Atzlei Kohona. There were Kohanim who were lazy and would allow meat of the Kohona to become Noser, to be left over beyond the time.
By not eating it
in time. So like this, if they declared Truma on it, same idea. In other words, then this way the Kohanim will be quick to eat. So as far as Trumas V'Yadayim, the Midrabbanon, given that Trumas V'Yadayim is only Midrabbanon, then the Chachamim didn't make as part of their takana that we should combine together pigul and noser. Rashi says, because you don't make a takana for a takana. You don't make a gzera on top of a gzera. So if you have the whole concept that they're matama your hands is a gzera d'rabbanon, you're not going to make a gzera on top of it that you're going to combine together, different kinds. Avala inin achila, but Rabbi Yehuda says, when it comes to eating, if a person eats pigul and noser, kazayas of pigul and noser combined, then with starfin, they do combine together. Now, what do we mean as far as Rashi explains over here, what it means is like this. We would go according to the roiv. If roiv of this kazayis was pigul, then the person would be chayev for eating pigul. If most of it was noiser, then he'd be chayev for noiser. And Rashi actually brings from his Rebbe, that what if it was exactly half and half? Then Rashi says he would actually be chayev for noiser and pigul. Now, Achronim say, Tosef Yom Tov, for example, says, it's brought on the bottom over here, it doesn't actually mean he would be chayev for both, because you can't be mechayev him for pigul and noiser, each one that was only a half size of. What it means is, depends which hasroah they gave him. If they gave him hasroah, don't eat this kazayis, because half of it is noiser, and he eats it, then he's going to get malchus for noiser. And the same thing with malchus.
They can't give
myself a bulk. The pashas nas, each one is only a half of kazayis.
But he says
that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that it's not mitzaref as far as the din d'rabbanon of tumas yadayim, but it is mitzaref as far as eating. Now Rashi is saying over here that it means, you know, that it's combining together insofar as that he's chayev, for example, malchus. Tosfos and a few other places talks about the possibilities. Would it also combine together so that if he was shogeg, he would be bringing a carbon? We learned in Karissus that noser and pegel are both among the things for which you have to bring a carbon chassas if a person ate him b'shogeg. So would the same thing apply? Basically, you have to have desires. But over here, Rashi is saying that for malchus at least, it's enough to have half of one and half of the other, and it combines. See? The question is, why do they combine the Tanya? Because we're learning a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. The Pasuk says, Lo ye ochel ki kodesh hu. The Pasuk says about Noser that you should not eat it because it is kodesh, meaning kol shema kodesh pasul. And Rashi actually mentions over here a different Pasuk, the previous Pasuk, which meant to be kodesh heim. So heim is in the plural, meaning that they both combine together. So therefore, in other words, kol shabak kodesh posel, anything among kodshim which is posel, which pigul and noser are both posel, bo hakosav listen loses, the Torah is telling you that there is a loses, that there's a general loses there not to eat it. So in other words, in that sense, pigul and noser are not considered two different isurim. Even though it's true, the concept of pigul comes from one posel, and the concept of noser comes from a different posel, and the concept that a person is chayav kodesh comes from each of those respective psukim, but when it comes to the lab for which the person would get malchus, that you have the general thing over here, lo ye'ochol kodesh hu, that anything of kodesh which is possible, there's a lab not to eat it. So therefore, both of these things are included under the same lab, and therefore he'd be therefore he could get malchus for one or the other.
With regard to the more strength, that's two different psukim here, the actual malchus.
Right. But again, you have, as I said, Tosfos in other places talks about, it's not so simple because on the face of it, if it's a lav that includes multiple things, then it would be called a lav shebeklalus. And a lav shebeklalus is machlokes in a number of places in Shas, whether a person gets malchus for a lav shebeklalus. If we say that not, then they wouldn't combine, then you wouldn't be getting malchus anyway. Then it's only relevant whether they combine as far as a korban, if it was b'shogeg.
But malchus you get even if it's less than kazayis, right?
Well, no. Normally, you only get malchus if it's a kazayis. Rashi is saying over here, if you have no deraisa, so what it is, there's a concept called chatsi shir oster min atzeret. It's actually, and the truth is, it's actually a machlokas. We're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, and coming up to Yom Kippur now. It's actually a machlokas in Yuma, in the last parak of Yuma between Rabbi Yochanan and Rosh Lakish, whether chatsi shir is oster min atzeret or not. If the person eats less than the shir, the kazayis in most of these cases, for example, is he over on something min atzeret or not? Rabbi Yochanan says yes. Rosh Lakish says no. Halachas like Rabbi Yochanan. But that a person is still violating the mitzvah if he eats less than half of kazayis. It's not just also if he eats less than kazayis. It's not just also jirabon. However, for malchus or korban or any of the other consequences, you need a full kazayis. Mishnah says, ha'oichal shenitma ba'ava tuma v'shenitma b'vlava tuma. If you have food, two different foods, one of them became tomei with an ava tuma, so for example, it directly touched sheretz, and now it itself is a rishon, the shenitma b'vlada tuma, and then you have other food that touched a vlada tuma, so let's say it touched a rishon the tuma, so now it's a sheni. So you have some food that's a rishon, some that's a sheni. What happens if they combine together? Mistarfin, zeim zeh, l'tamei b'kal shebashneim. They combine together to be mitamei according to the more lenient one. So if you have... You don't have a shear, you don't have an individual shear of each one. The truth is actually, even if you do have, if you have a shear of each one, yeah, you're right. Then you have, yeah, there's a number of Mishnayos and Taras that talk about different permutations. If you have a shear of each one, if you don't, but yeah, here we're talking about you have less than a shear of each one, you have less than a kabeza of each one. Therefore, when you combine together half a kabeza of Rishon food and half a kabeza of Sheni food, the din is, it's considered all Sheni. So unlike in the previous Mishnah, where we said that Noser and Pigel don't combine, or we said, for example, that Nebela and Besaram Nes don't combine, even Kakal Shabashneim, we don't say a person touches this half, this thing, which is half Kazayas of Nebela and half Kazayas of Nes, that he should be tomei, like he touched a nevela. But here we do. We say that food is not matame a person, daraisa anyway, but it's matame other food. The point is, in other words, if this mixture of rishon and sheni touches other food, it will make it a shlishi. It won't make it a sheni, even though half of it is rishon, because the other half of it is sheni. But it'll be the whole thing will be considered sheni, and therefore it'll make other food shlishi. So if it's cholin, it's not relevant. There's no shlishi by cholin. Only if the other food is it's truma or kodshin would it be relevant.
So again, just a little bit confusing. How do you get the rishon? How do you get the sheni?
Okay, so let's say for example, let's take a typical avat truma for example is a sheret.
Okay.
So you have a dead sheret. First of all, if a person touches that dead sheret, then they themselves are tameh, and they need to go to the mikveh, and they need hayav shemesh.
That's one day.
Right. Then, meanwhile, if food touches that dead sheret, that food becomes a rishon l'truma. If that food now touches other food, then it's a sheni. Shlishi, revi, etc. You only have shlishi when it comes to truma and kodshim, and on revi only by kodshim.
So if the
treasure
touches that food, and the person touches that food, he becomes
there. No, midaraisa, a person can't become tamei from food. Even midrabanan, there's only if a person eats tamei food, then we're going to mention soon in the Mishnah. That's actually the next thing in the Mishnah. But yeah, so over here, so you have, let's say for example, so you have, let's say for example, an apple that touched the dead sheret. And you have an orange that touched that apple. Now, if you take a half kabeza of the apple and a half kabeza of the orange and mix them together, then you've got a complete kabeza, which is considered a sheni l'truma.
You go to the lower one.
So you go to the lower one, right? That's what it means. Mitzayif and bakal shabashneim. You go from the muni. Okay. Mishnah continues. Kola oichum mitzayif and zayim zeh. All foods combined with one another, lifts are like via kibachati pras, that they make a person's body puzzle to eat truma or kodshim if he ate
like a griya
means the body. Like you have, we talk about, we say for example that Hashem doesn't have goof or griya. They're two different words for a body. So lifts are like griya, to make a person's body puzzle to eat truma, kibachati pras if he ate a half a pras. A pras is, so like this. There's a standard size loaf of bread that they had in those days, the machlokas in the Gemara in Erevin, and from that comes the machlokas Rishonim, whether it's the volume of 6 eggs or 8 eggs. So pras is half of that, like we say in davening, pras v'shachas or pras v'nabai, means half. So pras would be 3 or 4 eggs size of bread, depending which time you follow. And then in turn, a half a pras then would be half of that, 1.5 or 2, as the case may be. Midrabanan, if a person eats food that is tomei, they themselves become posel, and they can't eat truma or kodshim until they go to the mikveh. I don't remember if they need hayav shemesh, but they do need to go to the mikveh. So what we're saying is, all different kinds of foods combine together to make up that half a pras. So we're saying, let's say, according to the opinion, that it's 1.5 eggs worth. So if you have, let's say, a half egg's worth of apples, and a half egg of oranges, and a half egg of bread, and you combine them all together, and all of them were tamei, rishon v'sheni, as the case may be, then you're not allowed to eat truma until you go to the mikveh.
That could be shlishi also.
Well, right. Actually, we had a long and very complex sugya about it in Chulin, what exactly kind of tamei food a person needs to eat, what degree of truma does it have to have in order to make it possible from eating truma. Let's not get into that. Let's assume that it was all rishon or all sheni to keep things simple. Also, another thing where you can combine together different foods is for the 2 meals worth of food that you need for an Eruv. For an Eruv Tchumen, not for an Eruv Tashilim. An Eruv Tashilim is another matter altogether. Primarily we're talking about over here actually for an Eruv Tchumen. An Eruv Tchumen, you need two meals worth of food. So it's either a primary food like bread that you would actually eat as the main thing of a meal, and you need 2 meals worth of it, or it's some kind of what the Gemara calls lifton, a side dish or a condiment or whatever, enough that you would eat it that you would eat it together with 2 meals. If you were eating 2 meals of bread, then you would eat this amount of those other things with it. So there's a Gemara in Erevin that has a long list of different. It was recently in Shlesha Krakim of Rambam. Also, there's a long list of different kinds of foods that each one the assumption is that this amount would be the typical amount that you would eat. If you have two meals that are mainly bread, then you would have this amount of this food with those two meals combined. So what we're saying is the same thing, any foods combined for that purpose. So if you have a half meal's worth of one kind of food and one meal's worth of another kind and another half of another kind, then it combines together and you can use it all for Eruskom. Also, the kabeza latame tumas erich. Then also all foods combined together to make up a kabeza as far as being the tame other food with tumas erich. It's, by the way, it's machlokes rishonim whether you need a kabeza together to become tame or not, or whether food can become tame even if you have less than a kabeza of it, but to be matame other food, everybody agrees you need a kabeza. Another thing where different foods combine is as far as making up a chagrit geres, as far as carrying on Shabbos. Different kinds of things that a person might carry outdoors on Shabbos from one rishus to another. There's different shiurim for different things. The basic idea is it has to be enough of that thing that would have that most people would have a use for. So there's different things. You have a couple of prakim in Masechta Shabbos that deal with details of that. This amount of grass, this amount of paper, that amount of stones, et cetera, et cetera. When it comes to food, the shear is kigurgetis, the size of a dried fig. And he was saying, well, it depends whether we have the same size figs as they did in those days, but whatever, yeah. The point being, in other words, that, again, different kinds of foods combine for that purpose. You have a little bit of one food and a little bit of another and a little bit of another, and a person carries it outside of Shabbos. On Shabbos, he's going to be chayav as long as it all together adds up to a kavirus. Similarly, another one is when it comes to adding up to make the size of a date on Yom Kippur. When the Torah tells us not to eat, then it means a person eats kazayas, then he's chayav, whatever the comes.
What time is last night?
It was, right?
9:30.
There might be a 9:30. So usually when the Torah says a person's not allowed to eat, then a kezias is the shear. However, when it comes to Yom Kippur, the Torah never says in so many words, don't eat. It says, ta'anu esnafshe seichem, you should afflict your souls. Therefore, the Chachamim figured out what it means is it has to be an amount that a person wouldn't feel afflicted, that they wouldn't feel the effect of the fast anymore. And that amount is the size of a kesevis, a large date. So a little bit smaller than a kabeza, whatever. Anyway, the point is, again, different kinds of foods can combine together to make up that amount. So a person eats a little of this and a little of that and whatever, and it adds up to a kesevis, then he's high of the consequences for eating on Yom Kippur. Also, so this is so far as far as food, different things where different kinds of foods combine together. Similarly, as far as drinks, kolamashkin mitzayfin zimzu, all liquids combine with one another. We do have to stress, when it comes to mashkin, not everything is considered a mashke in halacha, only the shiva mashkin. Other kinds of liquids are not considered mashkin in halacha. Maybe they're just considered made payers, right, they don't have any money. But kolam mashkin mitzayfin zimzu, all different liquids combined with one another, lichtsilas agviya gerevias, again, to passel a person from eating truma if he drank the revias to them. So you had a little bit of water, let's say a little bit of water and a little bit of wine that were, and a little bit of oil or whatever that were tumah, and a person drank a combined revias to all of them, then he passel to eat truma. The chemloi lugma b'yema kiturim, and also as far as making up the meloi lugma, a cheekful, which is the amount that a person is chayev for drinking at once on Yom Kippur.
Not much.
It's not much, right? Yeah. But again, the idea is because it has to be ta'anu, and when a person drinks that amount, then he doesn't feel the inu anymore.
So a mashk, a mashk kazal, right? So when you take medication on a kipper, would that be?
So that would be, that's less than a revis. That's approximate. That's less than maloy logum of either.
Right. So,
right. So yeah. So a revis is according to the Rambam Chaim knows around 3 ounces. The poskim say that a maloy lugma was a bit less than half of a revius. So therefore, fine, a half a revius would be an ounce and a half. So if there were shot glass, is an ounce. So then a regular shot glass is an ounce, so you're good. Okay.
So basically, when it comes up from this mission that comes to food and drinks, they're much quicker than the previous mission.
Right. Because the previous mission you had, for example, was different kinds of tumors. Sheretz versus Nevela, Nevela versus Nes, Tegel versus Noiter, etc. We're talking about that in the first part of our Mishnah, we're talking about where they have different levels of Truma, fine, but as the Gemara is going to say, they're still all Vladis Truma. And in the second part of the Mishnah, we're talking about they all have the same, they're all considered food, and they all maybe have the same degree of Truma or not. It's just a question of they're different foods, that's all, so therefore they can be. This is what's Tanya with the Brayta. So Rav Shimon Omer, Matam. Why is it that we say in our Mishnah that Rishon food can combine together with Sheni food, and then the whole thing is considered Sheni? Why don't we say like in the previous Mishnayos, because they have different levels of Tumah, therefore they don't combine? The reason is She'ef Shalosh Sheni She'yot Rishon. The Shiyat Rishon. The reason is because a Sheni is able to make other food a Rishon. So therefore, in that sense, they're considered the same thing. So Gemara says, what do you mean? Well, that's the question. Are they called Sheni Rishon? What do you mean? How does a Sheni make other food Rishon? Hola Efshah. So that's impossible. Truma goes down. It doesn't go up. There are cases, Derabanan, where it's able to go up. But that doesn't involve food. That involves drinks. You have food that Tomei is able to make drinks, is able to make mash, can be considered a Rishon Latruma. But here we're focusing only on food. The answer is, Amar Rava Hachi Kama. The Rava says, yeah, but what Rav Shimon means is like this. Mi goram l'sheni. What is it that caused the food to be sheni? Lav rishon. It was, after all, a rishon. So therefore, in that sense, it can be considered like a rishon. And therefore, they can combine. In other words, for example, in the previous Mishnah, let's say a sheretz and a nevela. A sheretz doesn't cause the animal to be a nevela. A nevela doesn't cause a person to be a mess. So therefore, there's no connection between one and the other. But there is a direct connection between rishon and sheni, because a rishon causes the next food it touches to be a sheni. Yeah. Rav Ashi, Omer Rav Ashi says the same thing, but in different words. Rishon v'sheni, gabish shlishi, when it comes to, you're comparing Rishon and Sheni relative to shlishi, b'nei choda biksa im. It's like they all live in the same, they're all housemates. Biksa literally means like a hut. So like they're all roommates, sort of. Like Rishon and Sheni, they both, like Rava said, they're very closely related, because the Rishon creates the Sheni, and therefore both of them are able, therefore both of them, therefore relative to a Shlishi, can be considered effectively the same thing. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'orla v'kalaya kerem istayfin zem zem. Orla and kalaya kerem are able to combine together. So Rashi says we mean for the same purpose as we said before. In other words, as far as Noiser and Pigel, that they will combine together as far as Malkus, and maybe as far as the Kerben, etc. The Rambam understands it differently. The Rambam says that no, it means as far as Bittel. Orla and Kalaya Kerem, both of them, you need 200 times as much Heter to be Mevatel them. Unlike most Bittulim, you need 60. Truma, you need 100. Orla and Kalaya Kerem, you need 200. So the Rambam learns that what it means is they combine together in the sense that if you had a mixture of Orla and Kalaya Kerem fell into regular food, you would need 200 times as much as each of them individually to be mevatel them. You wouldn't say, for example, that if you, so let's say you have a pound of Orla and a pound of Kalaya Kerem fall into 200 pounds, you're not going to say that, well, okay, we have 200 pounds of regular food. They cancel out the 1 pound of Orla and they cancel out the 1 pound of Kalaya Kerem. We wouldn't say that. We would say you need 400 pounds there.
You need 200 for each one.
In other words, so we consider that now we have 2 pounds of Isser fell in, and therefore you need 200 times as much. You need 400 pounds. Rav Shimon Omer ein mitzarfin. Rav Shimon says they don't combine together. So the Gemara says, "Umitzarach Rav Shimon l'tzarufi." What do you mean that Rav Shimon is saying that they don't combine together, implying that it should be possible to combine them? However, I hold that these are considered different isurim, and therefore they don't combine together. Rav Shimon doesn't even hold that you need a combination, because Vatanya, we learn in a brayta, Rav Shimon am a kol shehu l'makas. Rav Shimon says when it comes to getting malchus, a person gets malchus even if he ate less than a kazayis. Now, the Chachamim disagree with that, but we're talking Rav Shimon in our mission over here. So we always say that a person only gets malchus if he eats a kazayis. But Rav Shimon holds that no. When it comes to malchus, a person can get malchus for eating a kosher. So what is he using the expression in the mission, ein mitzarfin, implying they should combine? However, I hold that these are considered different minim, and therefore they don't combine. The answer is, Tony, you're right. That's what Rav Shimon means in the Mishnah. He doesn't mean ein mitzarfin as they, we should have had to combine them. However, we don't. In other words, he's makel. Rather, ein tzrichim mitzarfin. You don't have to combine them. In other words, he's makel, because you don't need, it doesn't matter. Even a kosher, a person's chayav malchus for eating. So he's actually makel, right? So the Tanakhama is saying, as long as you have a combined kazayis, then the person would be chayiv. But if the combination was less than a kazayis, he wouldn't be chayiv. And Rav Shimon is saying it doesn't matter. Even if you only have a kosher of each one, he's going to be chayiv anyway, right? The halacha is like the chachamim. So you need a kazayis. Okay. Mishnah says, last one in the series, have beg. Okay, so now you have like this. There's different kinds of fabrics that have different sizes to become tameh. there is cloth, regular cloth, where you have there's two different sizes in which it can become tummy. It can be 3x3 esbois for most tumas, and 3x3 tefachim when it comes to tumas midras, the tuma that you get from a zav sitting or leaning or whatever on it, not just touching, but sitting somehow resting his body weight on it somehow, right? That's as far as cloth. Then you have then there's different kinds. You have sackcloth, which is coarser. You need a larger amount. You need 4x4 tefachim to be the tamei midras. Then you have leather. You need 5x5, and then you have a mat that's woven out of reeds or whatever that people would sleep on. You need 6x6 tefachim to be metamei tumas midras. You need more. The coarser and thicker it is, the bigger size you need for midras.
Is leather thicker than the reeds?
Not necessarily. I guess it depends how they make the leather. So the Mishnah says, "Habeged b'hasak, a piece of regular cloth and a piece of sackcloth, or hasak b'ha'or, a piece of sackcloth and a piece of leather, ha'or b'hamakbet, or a piece of leather together with a piece of a mat. Kol and mitzayfen zeim zeh, they all combine one with another." And Rashi says that means lakal himen. Meaning, in other words, let's say, for example, so we're saying each one of these ones that's mentioned later in the Mishnah is more lenient than the previous one because you need a larger shear for it to become tummy. So let's say, for example, you were to take a piece of leather, which is not quite 5x5 yet, then you take a piece of a sack, which has a smaller shear, 4x4. So you attach, let's say, a piece of sack to a larger piece of leather, you sew them together, let's say, and the whole thing is 5x5. Then it's mistatus. So it won't be mistatus if you have a smaller piece of leather with a larger piece of sack to be 4x4. That doesn't work.
If you end up with a bigger piece,
if you end up with as long if part of it is leather. Basically, the idea is if you have two different shearim. So if you have, let's say, part of it is leather, you need the size, you need the shear of leather for it to be metame. So it doesn't matter that not all of it is leather. Some of it can be made out of sackcloth or out of cloth, which have a smaller shear. But as long as the total amount is 5x5, which is the shear for leather, and it contains leather, then it will be metame.
It doesn't matter how much of each one you have. You have to go with
You have to go with the one that's more lenient, the one that needs the larger size,
yeah.
Right? Amr Rav Shimon Matam. Rav Shimon says, why is that? Why do we say that they combine together? The reason is because they're able to become tummy when you make them for a seat. If you take a few different pieces like that and you make one big piece out of them that you want to sit on, hello, then you're going to be able to sit on it. Therefore, Rav Shimon says that's why they're able to combine. In other words, the person is not necessarily going to, let's say, I want to sit only on a piece of leather, or I want to sit only on a piece of sackcloth or whatever. He doesn't mind sitting on something that's made out of a little bit of one and a little bit of the other, and therefore Rav Shimon says that's why it's able to combine. So as well says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Seya Mikulon Shlosha, suppose that a person took a bunch of these different materials, and he cut out pieces of them, he cut off from each one that we mentioned in the Mishnah, cloth, sackcloth, etc., and he made one piece out of all of them that is 3x3 tefachim, and he made from them a cloth, and he made from them a piece of cloth, then it depends. L'mishkav shlosha, if he made it that he intends to use it for lying on, for example, Rashi says he wants to sew it onto a pillow to be part of the lining of the pillow, then shloisha, then the din is once it's 3x3 tefachim, then it's metame. Then it's able to become tame. We said in the Mishnah, we were saying that for sack you need 4x4 and for leather 5x5, etc. That's when you're intending to sit on it. That's when you're intending it to sit on. Sitting actually we're going to say in a second is going to be even less. No, when do we say it's 5x5 if it's going to be for tumas midras? For example, if it's going to be that you're going to be standing on it. But if you're making it that you're using it as a covering of a pillow, then 3x3 is enough.
So a head's much smaller than a body.
Right.
Midras is standing or lying down?
Well, there's five different kinds of midras, Moshav Tefach, also if he takes all these pieces and makes it into something to be used as a seat, so then even if it's only one Tefach, then it's able to become Tommy Midras. Because one tepach is enough to be able to use as a patch. No, you can't sit on only one tepach, but you can use it as a patch. That's the thing. Also with the pillow, it's not that you're using the whole three tefachim, it is the entire space that you're resting your head on. But you're able to use it as a patch for a pillow, for example. The same thing over here. You're able to use it as a patch for a seat cushion or whatever.
It's a patch.
Patch, meaning a tly. Yeah. And if you have a piece of any of these materials that he's cutting out in order to use it to hold on to things, then even if it's smaller than that, then it's still able to become tummy. So the shirim we're talking about in the Mishnah are talking about primarily when we're talking about you didn't designate them for any specific use, so then you need those minimum amounts for them to become tummy midrash. But if specifically you intended to put to use them as to sew onto a pillow, then it's 3x3. If you specifically intended to sit on, then it's 1x1. And if you specifically intended it that you're going to use it as like a makeshift glove kind of to be able to hold on to things, then even kol shehu, even a smaller amount, is able to. The Rambam learns that even so, kol shehu is still a minimum amount. It's supposed to be 3x3 at boys. The Ravid, I believe, disagrees with that. But anyway. So the question is, my lachis, what do we mean that you're using a piece of cloth to hold on to something? A piece like that, a small piece like that, is useful for weavers. Namely, so Rashi describes that you have when you're setting up the loom. So you have the threads over there that are the sheti threads that are going through the frames of the loom, which eventually you're gonna pass the air back and forth between them. So what you do is you rub those. You want to make sure that those threads stay separate. You need them to stay separate. So when you raise and lower the frames, then there'll be spaces between them that you can put the Erev thread back and forth. So therefore, what they would do in those days to smooth them out, they would rub them with bran. The bran from grain, and then so then you use a little piece of cloth in order to do that. Tosfos says so it's not too smooth. Like, you know, you don't want to smooth them out too much. You want them to still have some kind of, you know, you still want them to have some kind of body to them, so they'll grab onto the Erev thread. But also, I mean, the threads are very sharp, so they're very thin. You don't want to cut your fingers. So therefore, you'd use a little piece of cloth to use that to rub the bran onto them. So therefore, a little cloth like that is useful. But Masnisa Tana and a Braisa we learn a different thing. It's also useful. It's also for people who are cutting or harvesting figs. So the idea is, Rashi says that the idea is they don't want their hands to get dirty with the juice of the figs. So they wrap a little piece of cloth around their fingertips or whatever.
In Mishnayos,
they have a similar thing. Yeah. So Shloshim Parkunin and Haynes, somewhat similar. Yeah. So therefore, even a small piece like that is Makabel Truma because it still has a function.
You'd have
someone else.
All right.
So now, leaving aside the previous perek, which mostly was talking about matters of when things do and don't combine, in the previous perekim, we were talking about what kind of kodshim does me'ilah apply to, when does it start applying, what parts does it apply to, which cases do we say that you're not allowed to have hanah, but me'ilah doesn't apply. All this time, though, we've kind of been glossing over the question. All this time, we've kind of been glossing over the question, what exactly does a person need to do in order to be chayav for me'ilah? So now this perek is going to be dealing with that topic. I think we found before that a lot of mesechtos in the Mishnayos seem to be arranged almost backwards like that. Like instead of beginning with you first want to begin with the basics. What is me'ilah? What does a person have to do to commit me'ilah? And then you'll start talking about what things it applies to or not. A lot of times the Mishnayos seem to do it the other way around.
Kedushin
is an example of, Kedushin starts with Hayishin Niknis Vesholmish Drachim, which is a sensible enough place to begin Kedushin.
But it
mentions Gittin over there, but no, you have a better example, Masechta Gittin actually is a good example, because Masechta Gittin, instead of starting to talk about the dinim, how do you write a get, what are the conditions under which a get should be given, etc., it starts off with this oddball case. I maybe get mibidin at the yam about b'fanin nechtem. So I once said, I think a reason for it is, we have to remember, Torah Shabbal Peh was originally Baal Peh, right? Eventually they had to start writing it down because it's going to be forgotten. but they had to start memorizing it with a fixed text or whatever. So maybe the idea is they didn't at first have to memorize or write down the basic halachas because everybody knew them. They had to write down the oddball cases, like I maybe get the Medinat Yam or like, you know, Kodshe Kodshim versus Kodshim Kalim when it comes to meal or whatever. Later on, as time went on, they also needed to write down and memorize the more basic things because otherwise those were going to be forgotten also. So is that so, basic Nish? But that's my feeling.
And then when you start with the condition, that's a question. First, you have to know how to do the condition, and then you talk about get.
Right.
Maybe
the Mishnah mentions it, but they have a kohen that's asking for get or mitzvah sabah, but that's just by the way, while it's mentioning Oshin Nikmas. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Hanena mina hektish shava pruta. If a person has hana from something of hektish, where he has a pruta's worth of hana from it, even though he didn't damage the thing that he used, Moal, Rabbi Akiva says still he's committed me'ilah. Having hana to a pruta's value is considered enough to be me'ilah. Anything which normally gets damaged in the course of use, then the person commits me'ilah only if he was poigim, only if he damaged it. If the normal use of it doesn't involve a pgam, then once he has enough, he's committed me'ilah. What are some examples where we mean something that usually has pgam versus not? Suppose, for example, that a woman takes a golden chain, a golden necklace that belonged to Hektish, and put it around her neck. She took a ring that belonged to Hektish and put it on her finger. And by the way, now how does she come to be in possession of something of Hektish in the first place? Some of them are Forshim say, we'd have to be talking about, let's say she's one of the treasurers of the Beit Mikdash. So we're going to learn in the next parak, it can happen, it can happen that the treasurer of the Beit Mikdash has various things of the Beit Mikdash in his possession, because they're not always necessarily in the vaults of the Beit Mikdash. He could conceivably have things by him at home. Because for example, the idea is the gizbar is always busy buying and selling things for Hektish. So you can have, for example, let's say that he has something of Hektish, which he thinks he has a customer for, so he brings it home, so that way later the guy can, later on, the potential customer can come to his house and take a look and see if he wants to buy it.
So first, if you're selling something that belongs to Hektish, but you want to try and see if it fits, is that considered...
would it be considered me'ilah? It's a good question. I don't know. You might not. But so what's the one possibility is we're talking about a woman who... I'm not sure I understood what
you're saying. Eggdish, it must be eggdish. Whatever you have, the actual use, what you're going to use is...
Yeah, but no, what Ellie was asking is, let's say, for example, so the gizbar, let's say, has a ring that belongs to Hektish. Somebody wants to buy it, but they want to try it on first to see if it fits. Basically, it's a good question, I don't know. Okay. The Kenyan is only if you only actually intended to buy it. I don't know. Anyway, but so that's one possibility that we're talking about, that she herself is a gizbar. Another possibility is maybe that she didn't realize it belonged to Hektish. The reason why that's important is because we're going to learn later on that we're going to start learning in the Gemara that there's actually, Tosfos in particular learns that there's two different kinds of me'ilah. There's me'ilah that involves having hanar or pgam, which we're talking about in our Mishnah, and then there's me'ilah which involves taking something out of the reshus of Hektish. Which Tosfos learns that even if there was no hana or pagam involved, just taking it out of the reshus of Hektish itself is already enough to constitute me'ilah. So Tosfos calls them me'ilas hana versus me'ilas hoitzah. Not everybody agrees with that, but the point is, looking at that way of things, if, for example, let's say somebody else had taken this necklace from Hektish and then given it to the woman, she wouldn't be committing me'ilah because me'ilah already happened once it was taken out of Hektish. So that's why we'd have to be talking about that either she herself is responsible for it as being part of Hektish, or let's say that she took it not knowing that it was Hektish. Okay. Anyway, so those kinds of things, a golden necklace or a golden ring, those don't get damaged by putting them on. Shosav akos shel zahav, or another example, a person took a golden cup that belonged to Hektish and drank out of it. In all those cases, kivin shenen amor, once they had a hana to the value of a shava pruta, then they've committed me'ilah. How do you figure out how much a shava pruta is worth with these things? Rashi says, what you do is, let's say, for example, in the case of the jewelry, how much would she be willing to pay to rent this kind of thing, to go to a party wearing this jewelry, let's say? So And then, so as long as it was a lease, a prufta, so that establishes the value of the hana. So now, let's say, for example, she'd be willing to rent this kind of ring to go to a chasana, let's say. She'd be willing to pay $10 to rent this ring. Okay, then $10 is the amount of the meila. Lovash b'choluk, on the other hand, let's say a person put on a shirt, an undershirt that belonged to Hekdesh, or kisa b'talus, he wrapped himself up in a talus that belonged to Hekdesh, or bikeya b'kardum, or he chopped wood with an axe that belonged to Hekdesh. Now, in all those cases, it's pagam. You put on a piece of clothing, it creates pagam, because now the clothing is dirty, and it needs to be washed, and it's wear and tear, whatever. So loy mal ad shiyufkim. So the chachamim are saying not like Rabbi Akiva, who said because he had hanav and already committed mela. The chachamim are saying since pagam is possible, since pagam is normal by these things, then he's only committing the ila if he actually created a pagam. So only if the pagam is worth at least a shavah prota. Hanenim in a chatas kshis chaya. Continues the Mishnah. Suppose a person has hanav from an animal of chatas while it's alive. Loy mal ad shiyufkim. There's another example. He only committed mela when he was poisoning it. Because let's say for example, he rode on it, he cut off a bit of hair or wool from it or whatever. It doesn't affect its validity as a chasa. Let me restate that a little differently. So if he just has hanah from it without pagam, then he hasn't committed meila. So if he just rode on it, let's say, and the riding was worth a shavah prota, it's the kind of thing that normally a person would be willing to pay a prota to ride on this animal. Then he hasn't yet committed meila, because again, it's something that you're able to be poigin. It has a value to Hekdesh, and its value goes up and down depending on its health and the amount of wool and whatever it has on it. So in order to commit the meila, he would have had to be poigin.
It's funny if you have something to make up gimmick, you have to put it.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. So, for example, with this animal, if he rode on it, we would have to counsel it. Let's say it was a horse, right? He was talking about a chatas. We're talking an animal of chatas. So let's say it was a bull. Let's say it was a bull that somebody was going to bring as a chatas. So let's say he rode on it. So we would have to figure out afterwards, okay, is the value of it a pruta less than it was before as a result of carrying him around and therefore getting a little weaker or something?
But he had enjoyment.
That's what we're saying. There has to be pagima. If there was no pagima, doesn't matter how much enjoyment he had.
A ring, you get enjoyment by wearing it.
But there's no pagam. Wearing a ring is not normally poigim.
Oh,
so that's the difference. That's what the chachamim are making the difference.
So
is it some? One second.
Right.
See, Mesa, on the other hand, if he has hana from the animal after it's dead, kiven shenan amal, then as soon as he has hana to a purchase worth, then he's committed me'ila, because now we can't talk about pidima in anymore, because he can't be poided. It has no more monetary value to Hekdesh. So now it's just a question, did he use it? In that sense, it's like a golden cup. There's no pidima possible with it.
Oh, that's a difference.
If a pidima is not, I shouldn't say so much if a pidima is possible. So it explains over here, it's more along the lines of, is it something that usually, Tosfos actually gives a couple of explanations over here, is it something that usually, the pagima usually happens right away, or only later on, or is it something that it might be a pagima right away, but it would take some time to be noticeable? For example, Tosfos says, let's say when you put on a piece of clothing, let's say, you don't right away notice the pagam in it, but eventually, after a while, you notice it. Something about this Tana, we learn in the Braisa, Moide Rabbi Akiva, the Chachamim B'davar Sheyesh Bet Gam. Now Rabbi Akiva does agree with the Chachamim when it's something that is possible to be Poigim, that Me'ila only exists when he's Poigim. In other words, so even though in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva had used the expression Afa Pishale Pogam Mo'al, the Gemara is saying that the Braisa is telling us that it's not, don't take it at face value. It doesn't mean that Rabbi Akiva says you're able to commit Me'ila without a Pogam at all. If it's something that normally has a pagam happen to it, then you do need a pagam in order for me'ila to take place. So Gemara says, in that case, my komishli. Then what are Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham arguing about? The answer is Amar Rava bilavush mitzi'ah. First of all, they're arguing about a middle clothing. So let's say, for example, imagine you have, let's say, you have an undershirt, then you have a shirt, and then you have a jacket. So here we're talking about, let's say the shirt, the middle garment. So the outer one, you poigim right away, because it right away starts getting dirty from the dust in the air and whatever. The inner one right away starts getting dirty from your sweat and whatever. But the middle one doesn't right away get so nifgam right away. And again, here's where Tosafot talks about that it takes a while for it to develop a pgam. You don't notice the pgam right away. A couple of different variations on that. Anyway, so that would be one example. Another example, umilmala. Another example would be suppose a person wears a milmala that belongs to Hekdesh. Rashi and Tosafot both describe, based on a Gemara in Gittin, that a milmala is a very finely woven linen garment. It's very, very thin. Linen can be woven into very thin garments. And the Gemara describes that, like when you fold it up, when you can fold the whole garment up, and you'll end up with a thing that's only the size of a walnut, or a walnut and a half, because it's made out of such sheer, thin material that it folds down into something very, very small. So therefore, same idea. In other words, because it's a very expensive thing, you don't wear it very often. So therefore, it would take a while for a pgam to happen in it. So now here's where the machlokes is. That Rabbi Akiva says that since these things that you don't get a pgam right away, yes, later on in the long term there will be a pgam, but therefore he says forget about the pgam. As long as there was hana'ah, then you've committed me'ilah. The chamra saying doesn't matter now or later on. The fact is it is able to be nifgam. It is able to be nifgam in normal use. It may take a while, but unlike, for example, a golden cup, where in normal use it's not going to develop a pgam. So that's it. So that would be the difference between Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham. Something that doesn't necessarily get a pgam right away. It takes a while for the pgam to happen, or it's not noticeable until some time has passed. Does that count as something that's subject to pgam or not? Rabbi Akiva says no. And Rabbi Akiva says no, it's considered like a golden cup. Therefore, Me'ilah happens as soon as he has Hana'ah. And the Chum is saying that you still have to have that. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Let's talk about the basic source where we learn about Me'ilah and talk about what Me'ilah is. The Pasuk starts with Nefesh. The Pasuk goes like this, Nefesh Kisim El Mal, V'chot V'shgogah Mikod She'ashem. So we're going to focus on the Nefesh Kisim El Mal. So first of all, nefesh, what does it mean when it starts with nefesh? It means echad ha-yochid ve-echad ha-nasi ve-echad ha-mashiach. The same rules apply whether it was a regular person, whether it was a king, or whether it was the Kohen Mashiach, the anointed Kohen Gadol. Either way, they're all equally subject to the dinim of Me'ilah. We'll see in the Gemara why we need to say that, what the chiddush in it is. Then the pasuk continues, ki sim oil ma'al, if it commits a trespass, what is ma'al? Ein ma'al ela shinui. The word ma'al means changing. Changing the thing was supposed to be used for a certain purpose, and now it's being used for a different purpose. As the pasuk says, so you took it from the Rishos of Kodesh to the Rishos of Kohel. So you have also said similarly, the pasuk says, any man, when his wife goes astray, and she commits a mal against him, so what is she doing? She's exchanging. She's abandoning her husband and getting involved with something else that's cholin, that's beneath her dignity. And you have another pasuk that also says the same idea. The pasuk says they committed a ma'al, the Jewish people, committed the Aseret HaShvatim particularly, committed a ma'al against Hashem, by Yiznu Achrei Ba'olim, or the Kei Nechal Oretz, whatever. They went astray after Baal and after the various gods and whatever. So we see from there also that ma'al means to take from one reshus into another. So Tosfos talks about at some length over here, among others, why we need two psukim. And here's where Tosfos comes up with the chiddush that we were mentioning before about that there's two different kinds of me'ilah. There's me'ilah that we were describing in our Mishnah, which involves pgam or hana'ah. So for example, the hana'ah part of it is more similar to the sota. She has hana'ah from what she's doing. There's no pgam in it, though, because she's not pogim her husband. She's not even pogim herself in the sense that it's not like she was a sula before and now she's not. She can only be a sota if she was a ba'ula, only if she was married and had relations with her husband previously. So that's more the kind of me'ilah that involves hana.
She's pogim her husband because now they can live together.
Well, that's not pogim her husband. It's pogim her. If it's pogim her relationship with her husband, but it's not creating any pogam in his body or whatever. Yeah. As opposed to the case with Avodah Zarah is more of the case of shinui reshus. It's the me'ilah of shinui reshus, taking something. They don't have hanah. They don't necessarily. Your person doesn't necessarily have hanah from worshiping Avodah Zarah.
People wouldn't be.
Well, they had a yetzahara for it. Fine, but there's not necessarily a tangible hanah that they get from it. It's not like, for example, the Hanah, I got to drink from a golden cup, or I got to ride on this animal, or whatever. So therefore, that's more the kind of me'ila of taking things from of taking something from one reshut to another. And again, Tosfos goes on at some length over here with the details about that. Okay. Fine. Continue the braisa. Yochel pogam v'leinene. Now then, you would think if the person committed a pogam in Hekdish, even without having Hanah, then it should still be considered me'ila. And Rashi says, for example, let's say he took a piece of clothing in Hekdish and ripped it. So there is the Vayimalu Belekeavis to him. He changed it. Like they changed from serving Hashem to Lahavdil worshiping worshiping Getchkes. Same thing over here. He changed the piece of clothing, but he didn't have any Hanah from it. Maybe then in that case, we should say, if we're saying Ma'al means Shinri, then he should be higher for it. Or Oinen, he should be higher for Me'ila, that is. Oinen of like Pogam, or vice versa, if he had Hanah without creating a Pogam, which would be like the example of a Sota, so that maybe it should also be considered Me'ila. Over Mechobel Akarka, maybe also Me'ila should apply even to something that is still attached to the ground. So for example, Rashi says a tree that's a tree of Hekdesh that's still attached to the ground, or we had the other day, let's say, for example, a pit that belongs to Hekdesh, if a person, let's say, puts something inside the pit or whatever, over Shliach, so maybe it should be considered Me'ila, or over Shliach also Shlichosai, and maybe also it should be considered if the Shliach fulfilled what the Balabas told him to do, maybe the Shliach should be Chayah for Me'ila. We're going to learn in the next Perek, that's for example. If Reuven tells Shimon, his shliach, take this money and go buy such and such from the store, and Shimon does exactly what Reuven said and buys the exact thing, then the din is that Reuven is the one who committed me'ila, not Shimon.
The mishaleach.
Usually we say, throughout the Torah, we usually say, ein shliach v'dvar aveira. That, for example, if Reuven tells Shimon to go kill somebody, and Shimon does, then Shimon is the one who's chayev misa. Because we said, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, what are you doing listening to Reuven? You should have listened to the Eibishter, told you that you're not allowed to do that. Me'ila is about the only exception where we don't say that. We say that Reuven is the one who's chayav. So we're going to learn in the next parak that it has to be, in order for that to work, it has to be that Shimon did exactly what Reuven told him. If he changed it in any way, then he's chayav. But we'll work for that. We're going to see in the next parak. But the point is that you would think that when it comes to Me'ila, you shouldn't say that. You should consider that the Shliach should have committed Me'ila as if he did it on his own das. So how do we know that not? Talmud Loima, v'chota, therefore the puzzle continues, v'chota, that he sinned, which we have a Zeta Shava. If we have a So we have the word chet that it mentions in connection with a zor eating truma b'shoigig, and also in connection with me'ila. Therefore, we learn that there's a similarity between them. Ma chet ha'omer b'truma, just like the chet that's talking about by truma, what is involved? Number one, toigim. He was toigim because he took food of truma that belonged to the koyin, and he ate it. So he created a pogam in it. Now there's less food than there was before. The nana, and he had a hanah because he ate. Umisha pogam nana, and the one who did the pogima also had the hanah. Over dovish pogam by nana, also he had a hanah from the same thing that he was pogam. In meaning, in other words, for example, you could have a person does a pogam with one thing of hektish, and at the same time he's having hanah from a different thing of hektish. That wouldn't be considered me'ila necessarily.
Well,
the Rambam gives an example that actually involves, let's say, for example, the Rambam described, the person cuts out a piece of cloth from one piece of clothing and sews it onto another one. So the hanah is in the second piece of clothing, the pogam is in the first one. And the pogam is not in the, you can't say the pogam is in the actual piece itself that you cut out for the patch. There's no pogam in that. So therefore, that he was pogam in one thing, the original piece of clothing, and he's nene in something else, the patch. From them, but genumen the shtick. Yeah. It also has to be in, when it comes to truma, that the forgiver and the hanah happen at the same time. What is he doing? He's being poigim, he's taking away the food that belonged to the kohen, and he's being nanin, and at the same time. As opposed to, for example, you could have, let's say, where the person is poigim something, and only later does he have hanah from it. For example, let's say you take something and burn it for firewood. The pegima happens right away when you burn it. The hanah happens only later on when you bake bread or whatever on it. So all of those things are true of truma. Over tolush minakarka, also they only apply to things that are detached from the ground, because you only take truma after the produce has been picked, and then gemar malacha. Over shliach she'asa shlichosei, and when it comes to truma, you can have a shliach give truma for you. You can instruct another yid to give truma on your behalf from your crop. Ah, chetah omar b'me'ilah, the same way the chetah that's talking about in me'ilah has to have all those criteria. Pogim banana, it has to be that he was pogim and had hanah, or misha pogam nana, and the same one who did the pogam also had the hanah, or vadovish pogam banana, and the same thing that he was pogim in is what he had hanah in, or pogimose v'hanah ose ke'echad, the pogimah and the hanah have to be at the same time, or vatolosh minakarka, it has to be something detached from the ground, or v'shliach she'ose shlichose. And it has to be, and it happens if the shliach did his shlichos, that the shliach is the one who's considered to have done midah. Because we have the Gzeira Shava from Truma. That is why we know, therefore, that can't be, for example, like the Soita Hanor without Fadima. It can't be Hanor like without Fadima, like the Soita. It can't be Fadima without Hanor like worshipping Avodah Zarah. Even though we said in Me'ilah Elishinui, and we brought two psukim that use the word Me'ilah, one about Soita and one about worshipping Avodah Zarah, and one involves Hanah without Pagima, and the other one involves Pagima without Hanah. Nevertheless, we're saying the fact that we have the Gzeira Shava, Chet, from Truma, teaches us that it doesn't work like that. So if he's only Kogim and doesn't have Hanah, then he's a Mazik. He's a Mazik Machlokas, whether it's Machlokas we're showing him, whether he'd be Chayev a Kerem to Hektish Midaraisa, or whether he wouldn't be Chayev anything at all, and only Midrabanon would we make him Chayev for being Mazik Hektish. And if he has hanah without pugam, then we said in the Mishnah if it's something that pugam that normal use of it creates pugam, then he hasn't committed me'il either.
Normal use.
Well, that's, for example, we said, like wearing a piece of clothing or hat or cutting wood with an axe or whatever, which normally is
pugam.
So the normal use of it is pugam, and you can see the pugam right away. So then, if the pugam is a shavu prutta, then he's high.
So it comes much later on. Then.
Right. Okay. Continues the Braisa. Now, so far we would only know that this applies to a person who eats and has hanah, because we said we're learning from Surah. What about the davar she'ein b'pgam? But what about something that does not have a pgam? Shittuk about just takes out these words actually and says just ein li'ala oichel banana, that we would only know if he himself is eating and has hanah. Minayin achilosev achilas chaveri. How do we know that if he eats or has hanah from a chatzishir, and his friend has, and he gives it to his friend, and his friend has hanah from the other half of the shir, or his hanah and the hanah of his friend. So let's say for example, a person were to take something, a shavah prutah of hektish, he eats half of it, and he gives the other half of it to somebody else, and the other guy eats the other half of it. How do we know that combines? Or even if it was hanah and with his friend that was eating. So Rashi describes, let's say, for example, he took a prutah's worth of oil of hektish. He had hanah with half of it by smearing it on his skin. Then he gave the other half to his friend, and his friend ate it.
For cooking, right.
Or achilosev hanoyas chaveiro, the other way around, he ate half of it, and his friend had hanah from the other half of it. How do we know that those combine together? L'chora, that's not like truma, because truma, of course, is only chayiv if he eats it. But
atzilu l'zman merubah. If
you
smear,
you're not being mild. So it's only the expression in the pasuk. So how do we know that it combines? Atzilu l'zman merubah, even a long time later. So even, let's say, for example, he ate the chatzi shir in the morning, and the other guy ate the chatzi shir in the evening. How do we know that it comes up the same day or even a long time later? Minayin, how do we know it combines? Tamalemak, Tim Omal Mikom Rakam. Therefore, the Pasuk uses a double expression, Tim Omal, regardless, as long as Me'ilah was done, it doesn't matter even if we have to combine together two different Achilas or two different Hanois or what have you.
So it does combine.
So it does combine, unlike Tzurah.
What would it say? What do you expect
it to say? It could have just said Nefesh Kisimo. It didn't have to say Tim Omal.
So since he's one person that's taking half, and he's not have to cover, it does combine.
It does combine, right. To be exact, Tosfos says, Tosfos learns that when we say that a shliach is moil, that is only if the shliach himself is not having hanah from it. When it comes to, if Reuven gives the food to Shimon and tells Shimon, you eat it, then Tosfos learns Reuven would still be chayav for the meal, not Shimon. Tosfos distinguishes over here again between the two different kinds of me'ilah that we talked about before, me'ilah al-yedei hiksah and me'ilah al-yedei hanah. The Tosfos learns, when do we say that there's a shliach? When we say the shliach is chayav for me'ilah, only when we're talking about me'ilah of hiksah, taking it out of the reshus of hekdesh, like taking the money and going and spending it on something in the store. As opposed to me'ilah of hanah, then not. Then the usual rules would apply that ain't shliach l'dvar aveira, and then the usual rules would apply ain't shliach l'dvar aveira. And the shliach Shimon would be the one who's chayev. Let me rephrase that. What we're saying is when we talk about shlichus when it comes to me'ilah, again, what we're saying is if Reuven gives Shimon money to go to the store, for example, then when the money is given, then it's Reuven who's committed me'ilah, not Shimon. Even though Shimon's the one who actually gave the money to the storekeeper, Reuven's the one who's committed me'ilah.
Shimon doesn't even know what he's doing. That's actually true.
Well, and both of them don't know, really, because it's b'shogeg. Me'ilah is b'shogeg. But as long as he does the shlichus exactly what he was told, then Reuven is going to be chai. But Tosfos learns, it's not like that if it was achila v'hanah. If it was the kind of me'ilah of achila v'hanah, which is what we're discussing now, then Tosfos learns that no, Shimon, when he eventually finds out that what he ate was hektish, he's going to be the one chai. So Tosfos says, when we're talking about over here that Reuven ate a half kezayis, a half purta, whatever, and gave half a purta to Shimon, it would have to mean that he didn't tell Shimon to take it. Shimon picked it up with his hand and put it in his mouth. It would have to be that Shimon, that Reuven stuck it into Shimon's mouth. So even though the fact of the matter is, Shimon is the one who had the hanah, he's the one who had the hanah from eating it, Reuven didn't. Nevertheless, we say Reuven and Shimon's hanah are able to combine.
So what another Reuven had, Reuven doesn't eat it?
Because Reuven ate the other half.
Oh,
Reuven ate the first half, and then he took the other half, and then put it into Shimon's mouth.
And what's the difference if Shimon was actually taking it himself and doing it?
Because if Shimon took it himself, then we would say then Tosfos learns that Shimon would be the one who's chayev from Me'ilah. And if he had eaten a complete kurta's worth, then he would be the one who's chayev to pay hektish and bring a kurta.
Yeah, that's
because he had enough.
Since
it was only half a kurta, if only Reuven ate half a kurta, only Shimon ate half a kurta, there's no Me'ilah anyway. What we're saying is we're able to combine together Reuven and Shimon, but what we're saying is if what it was is that Reuven ate half the prutah and then he gave the other half to Shimon and Shimon ate the other half, then neither of them is going to be chayav me'ilah because neither one is considered to eat, neither one ate a whole prutah. As opposed to what we're saying is if Reuven takes it and sticks it into Shimon's mouth, then we say Reuven is responsible for me'ilah for the full thing. Half of it he ate himself, half of it he gave the other guy to eat. Even though it's two different people, hanah, it's still combined because it says Timo Mao.
That's why the difference if he's taking himself or if he's putting it in.
Exactly. Okay. So the Gemara says, so that's why, because it says Timo Mal. Okay. So we call Makrame. E ma chet omu b'truma. Well, then you're going to argue like this. After all, when it says chet by truma, why should that be? After all, if we say we have a zera shava from the word chet by truma, loy tzira shtei achilas kechad. We don't combine together two different eatings. If a person eats a half a pruta of truma at one point, and later on he eats the other half pruta of truma, then he doesn't have to pay the koyin, the keren mechomish, right? So by me'ilah we shouldn't be combining them together either. Minayin ochal hayoyim v'ochal amachar. So how do we know that if he ate some of it today and some of it the next day, that fiddle is man meruba, or even if it was a long time later, how do we know? Again, because it says Timo Mal, it means regardless, Me'ilah has been accomplished, therefore he's chayav.
Doesn't matter how much time.
You can still argue, though, after all, the chet that it talks about by Truma is, again, as we said before, the Pegima and the Hanah come about at the same time, because we said you take the food of Truma and you eat it, so therefore you're being Pegimit. Because now you've damaged it by putting it in your mouth and chewing it, and at the same time you're having hanok from it, you're enjoying the taste of it. So that we would say maybe the same thing should apply to me'ila. So again, how do we know that if you have, you're combining together what Reuven ate some and Shimon ate some, or even if it's 3 years apart, minayin, how do we know that he's still chayav from me'ila? Again, tamad leimer tumah ma'al mikol makom. What's the chiddush about 3 years? Mechoshim explained. One thing is, we learned in Masechta Christus that Yom Kippur is mechaper for various kinds of averus. In particular, we said if a person has to bring an Oshem Tolui and Yom Kippur passed, then he doesn't have to bring an Oshem Tolui anymore. So we actually discussed in the Gemara over there why we don't say that Yom Kippur is mechaper for Me'ila, such that he shouldn't have to mechaper for the first half of the Me'ila, such that later on, if he eats more, it shouldn't combine together. We said that's precisely why, because he hasn't eaten a full shear yet to be chayav.
Oh,
okay. So that's the chiddush I mentioned in 3 years. Well, that's why, because in other words, 3 years, there's enough time. Yom Kippur, many Yom Kippurs are passed already. Every year there's a Yom Kippur. And still, we say it still combines together. Yeah, that's the point. In other words, 3 years.
Why not go four? Why not six?
Okay, one thing. Well, 3 years is just an expression meaning a long time. But in other words, the point is, it didn't just want to say, no, it didn't just want to use, no, one second. The point is, it couldn't just say today and tomorrow, or it couldn't say this month and next month or whatever, because you would think, okay, but maybe it still means when you give her. Even if it said now and a year later, you wouldn't realize. You would say, let's say, you know, you're talking about he ate the one on Mossi Yom Kippur and he ate the other one on Erev Yom Kippur. You wouldn't realize that it means even if Yom Kippur passed. So by saying Shalosh Shanim, you're making it clear that Yom Kippur passed. Okay. Let's argue further. You can argue when it says chet by truma, ad shid yesim in akodesh lachol. When is a person chayav, a zor is chayav for eating truma? He took something that was kodesh and made it chol because he took it and ate it. What about min akodesh lakodesh? Suppose that a person does me'ila by taking something of kodesh and using it for a different kind of kodesh. No, kagoin, for example, lokach. No, here we're talking about me'ila. Kagoin lokach kinei zavim v'kinei zavis. Suppose, for example, a person takes money of hekdesh. So you have money, let's say, that he designated to buy a chatas or an asham or an olo or what have you, and instead he uses that money to buy a different korban. For example, he used it to buy birds that he needs for a korban for a zav or a zava, the kinei yoldus, or the birds that a woman has to give after she gives birth, the shokel shikloi, or let's say he took this money and used it for his master shekel, which also goes to hektish, the hevi chatosiv ashrama, I mean a hektish, or, okay, let's say, for example, actually, let's not say that he designated money for a chatos or an ashram. Let's say he took some money and he said, I'm making this hektish for bedek habayis. And now he took that same money and used it to buy a korban or to give for his master shekel or to buy a chatas or an usher. Right. So, well, the point is, kivin shahotzi mal, so how do we know that as soon as he spent the money on that purpose, right away he committed me'ilah? So let's say the master shekel, as soon as he takes it, Rabbi Hoda is saying, Rabbi Shimon is saying that, let's say, for example, so he had again this money of hektish. Let's say instead he took that money, and b'shoydig, forgetting that it was hektish money, he used it for his master shekel. As soon as he puts it into the box for the master shekel, right then, Rabbi Shimon says at that point he's committed me'ilah. It's a good question. Probably, I guess. I don't know. Well, yes, because we're going to be discussing the din, that one thing that Me'ilah accomplishes is once the person did Me'ilah, once Me'ilah is effective, it takes the thing out of the reshus of Hekdesh. So now, as soon as it lands in the box over there, it no longer belongs to Hekdesh. Well, now it belongs to Hekdesh again, but as Master Shekel, it doesn't belong to the original Hekdesh anymore. He just owes Hekdesh the value of it plus a chunch. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda says that actually, no, it's not when he first puts it in. It would be only when the blood of the korban is actually sprinkled, only then is he committed Me'ilah. Anyway, how do we know that whole concept? Rashi, by the way, makes a point over here that Rashi says, according to Reb Shimon, it comes out once he, for example, his korban, once he's brought his korban to the Azara, then he's not chayav b'achriyusa anymore. He's not responsible in case something happens to the animal at that point. Now, a lot of Achronim ask on that, what do you mean? Where the pashtus, he should be chayav b'achriyusa until the blood is sprinkled. Yeah, this is when the kapara takes place. And you have this discussion about that maybe there's a difference between the monetary chiyuv that he has versus the mitzvah that he has to accomplish his neder. He made a neder and a dover to bring a korban, so you have to accomplish that, and for that you need drikas dam. But you can talk about maybe as far as his monetary obligation towards hektish, once he brings the korban to the Beis Hamikdash, then already he's potter, even if the animal dies, it becomes a baal mum or whatever at that point inside the azar. That could be what Rashi means.
Even though he wasn't accomplished.
So even though he didn't accomplish, but nevertheless, he still, you could say, he's potter from the chiyuv mumen that he has at that point.
Now you can't.
It's a bomb one. But the point is, now he's not obligated to bring. Well, if it's a chatas, he's gonna have to bring a chatas anyway. But let's say, for example, with an oiler or a shlamim or what happens. Okay. So anyway, Rabbi Yehuda says that that's not enough. It has to be the blood was actually sprinkled. Only then does me'ila take place. Anyway, how do we know that? Again, we should argue that like truma, it has to be like truma, where it's being taken from kodesh to chol, whereas here it's being taken from kodesh to kodesh, because originally it belonged to hektish, and now it's also going to the mizbeach. Again, the pasuk says timel mal. Regardless, me'ila has been accomplished. Therefore, he's chayav for me'ila. So he's going to have to bring his korban. He's going to have to bring his keren b'chaymesh.
But it is accomplished. It's a continuing game of the shekel.
Yes, that's what because the point is because the money became cholin as soon as he committed me'ila with it. One thing that me'ila accomplishes is it makes the thing that he did me'ila with, it makes that thing cholin now. So therefore,
you have to replace that money plus
b'chaymesh.
So he comes and bring a korban.
Right. Okay. Stop them here.
So you have to really hold your...